People's Tribune Radio is on the air. I'm your host, Mike Thornton.
We get our orders from the state to focus attention just on this and to look at it in a particular way. But anyone with an independent mind is going to refuse those orders and try to understand what's going on. And there are easy ways to do it.
On this edition of People's Tribune Radio, our guest is Professor Noam Chomsky. That, plus our featured commentary. But first, these news stories from Nicole Trejo. Welcome back, Nikki.
Thanks, Mike. First, from the Progressive Review, the World Bank is proposing to send 37,000 Chinese and 25,000 non-Tibetan Muslims into Tibet in violation of its own guidelines that funded projects could not hurt ethnic minorities. The plan will come up before the bank's board in Washington on June 8th. Tibetans argue that the resettlement would be used to squash their influence in the region. From The Guardian, millions of North Koreans have been reduced to eating seaweed, cabbage stalks, and grass. With no prospect of real food for the next month, when some new season crops will start yielding food, hundreds of thousands of desperate refugees have been flowing across the border into China. Pyongyang has simply run out of food, says the UN World Food Program. From Antti Raatinen, June 18, 1999 will be an international day of action aimed at the heart of the global economy, the financial centers, banking districts, and multinational corporation power bases. Already, groups in 30 countries are preparing events for June 18th. Individual groups include Diverse Women for Diversity from the USA, North Sumatra Peasants Union, Bangladesh Garment Workers Federation, Policy and Information Center for International Solidarity out of Seoul, South Korea, and Chikoto, an umbrella movement linking different indigenous peoples fighting oil exportation in Nigeria. Protests are planned in many of the world's financial centers, such as London, New York, Sydney, and Seoul. From People Against Racist Terror, in Oklahoma, law enforcement officers will have greater freedom to conduct no-knock searches in the future with the signing of Senate Bill 580 by Governor Frank Keating. Current law permits no-knock search only if the officer has probable cause to believe that a warning would pose a significant danger to human life. Under the new law, a judge could authorize an officer to break open a door or window of a house without warning if the officer has reasonable cause to believe that the warning would pose a significant danger to human life, allow the possible destruction of evidence, give rise to the possibility of resistance or escape, inhibit the effective investigation of a crime, or be a futile or useless gesture. The expanded no-knock search law goes into effect November 1st. And finally, from Focus on the Corporation. Under the U.S. Occupational Safety and Health Act, violations of health and safety rules that pose a substantial probability of death or serious physical harm to workers are considered serious violations. This is roughly the standard needed to convict a criminal for manslaughter in some states. The average penalty for a serious violation is $709, according to Death on the Job, The Toll of Neglect, a report by the AFL-CIO. For People's Tribune Radio, I'm Nicole Trejo.
People's Tribune Radio is produced by the League of Revolutionaries for a New America, who also published the newspaper People's Tribune, Tribuno del Pueblo. Stay tuned for contact and ordering information at the end of the program. Professor Chomsky was interviewed by Eric Siljak, the host of Global Kitchen on KVMR-FM Radio.
Professor of Linguistics at MIT, Noam Chomsky, is a world-renowned scholar and political analyst. He has written and lectured extensively on philosophy, international affairs, U.S. foreign policy, and the mass media, and was the subject of the award-winning film Manufacturing Consent. Any attempt to look behind the headlines into complex history of the region, economics, or geopolitics is almost impossible because any departure from exclusive focus on genocide makes one almost a supporter of genocide. So in order for us not to lose half of our audience, we just have no choice but to start with, you know, atrocities, ethnic cleansing, emotionally charged arguments. So let me start by asking you about this basic argument that we hear, that U.S. military intervention is necessary to stop genocide in Kosovo, just like 50 years ago we went to war to stop Hitler.
Well, first of all, we didn't go to war to stop Hitler, so let's put that aside. The U.S. went to war with Hitler when Hitler attacked when Hitler declared war on the United States. Through the late 1930s, the United States was rather supportive of Hitler and very enthusiastic about Mussolini. As for intervention to stop actions to stop ethnic cleansing and humanitarian catastrophes and so on. Yeah, I think that's really important. And if anyone in the United States or the U.S. or British governments or other European governments were interested in doing that, they could do it very easily in far more serious cases than this, current cases. So, for example, you're absolutely right that we get our orders from the state to focus attention just on this and to look at it in a particular way. But anyone with an independent mind is going to refuse those orders and try to understand what's going on. And there are easy ways to do it. So, for example, look not very far away at, say, Turkey, right next door. In Turkey, in the mid-1990s, under the Clinton administration, there were the military was carrying out ethnic cleansing, destruction of villages, massacres, torture and terror on a scale way beyond anything that was claimed in Kosovo. This is in the Kurdish areas. There were perhaps several thousand villages destroyed, roughly 2 or 3 million refugees, maybe tens of thousands of people killed, right in the mid-90s. As the atrocity, it was done with U.S. arms, overwhelmingly, about 80%. As the atrocities increased, Clinton increased the arms flow to make sure that they went on. In fact, when human rights groups, like Human Rights Watch, discovered that U.S. jets were being used illegally in violation of congressional restrictions to attack civilian targets, the Clinton administration found various ways around them and kept sending them. You know, to act to prevent those atrocities would be quite simple. All we have to do is stop participating in them.
But then it brings us to the question, which massacres are fit for U.S. moral crusade?
Let's take a look at massacres, okay? The terms like massacre and genocide and so on are used very freely when people want to use them. So let's take a look at what the United States and NATO claim to be the case. And I'll assume that everything they say is true. So let's take U.S.-NATO assertions about Kosovo. What they say is, up to February 1999, up to March 1999, until the bombing started, there were about 2,000 people killed on all sides in Kosovo, most of them Albanian, probably the large majority of the 2,000. There were a couple hundred thousand refugees. This was, according to the United States, violence began with attacks on police, Yugoslavian police, in Kosovo, which is a province of Yugoslavia, by the KLA, the Kosovo Liberation Army, attacks from across the border, based in and supported abroad. The Serbian army reacted, and police reacted very brutally to that, pretty much in the way we're familiar with in, say, Lebanon, where Israel reacts to attacks on its soldiers that way, retaliation against civilians that led to further retaliation by KLA against Serbian civilians, and a cycle of violence built up through early this year. Well, you know, that's a humanitarian crisis, all right, but unfortunately one that's duplicated in many, many parts of the world. For example, it's almost identical to what the State Department describes as being the case in Colombia. Approximately the same number of people killed, another 300,000 refugees last year, according to the State Department, added to well over a million. The overwhelming majority of atrocities attributed to the army and its paramilitary associates, who are funded by the United States with increasing flow of arms, and we can continue around the world. So that's what's now called genocide in the very specific case of Kosovo. Now, what happened on March 23rd, 24th? Well, the United States presented the Yugoslav government with an ultimatum, the Rambouillet Agreement. Although it wasn't reported here, as far as I can discover, the Serbian National Assembly rejected it, but made a counterproposal. The counterproposal was kind of vague. We don't know exactly what it meant. The State Department representative, James Rubin, was asked at a press conference on March 24th about this Serbian Assembly counteroffer. And he said, we saw no silver lining in it, so we decided to bomb. Okay, that's the end of the diplomacy. First of all, they very strongly condemned the withdrawal of the monitors, the international advisors.
Why did they leave in the first place?
They were told to leave by the U.S. The Serbian government strongly opposed that. And in the same resolution that you're talking about, they once again condemn it. They wanted the monitors back. And yes, they have a resolution saying what it says is, roughly, after autonomy is negotiated among the various ethnic communities, we will consider the question of an international presence to guarantee, you know, the safety and so on of everyone. Well, okay, you know, maybe it's a good offer, maybe it's not a good offer, but there's certainly room for diplomacy. The U.S. simply refused.
Wouldn't the international community be interested, actually, in having as much as possible international presence, these monitors? And
well, first of all, there's no international community. The term international community is a term of propaganda, U.S. propaganda. There is no involvement of the international community here. Zero. The United States would not allow it. The international community is the United Nations. The international community is not NATO. The NATO powers, with varying degrees of commitment, are following the U.S. lead on this, but they do not constitute the international community, though that term is used here to refer to the United States and its allies. I mean, India is part of the international community, China is part of it, South Africa is part of it, Latin America is part of it. They're mostly opposed.
Seems like liberal people have replied.